One of the things I was saying last night is that we have a phenomena, and I think it's universal, in which you think you're seeing something that you might not be seeing. You think you're feeling something you may not be feeling. And what that means is that often our vision or our understanding, because it's guided by Shastra, and because we may not always understand the Shastra well, we try to fit our vision, our understanding, the way we interact with situations and people, and the way we allow ourselves to experience things, try to fit that within the context of Shastra in the attempt to see things properly, to deal with things properly, and to feel the proper way. And when we're practicing sadhana and we don't understand something well, then sometimes we're very uneasy about how we feel about something, because we tend to think that however I feel, not however, not always, but in many occasions, what I'm feeling, or what I think I'm seeing, what I think I'm understanding, is not correct, because I feel I'm not Krishna conscious enough to understand everything about myself and about a situation. And then this results in sometimes making wrong decisions, or being out of touch with gut instincts, or not being able to hear Krishna inspiring us. And so I think I made the point, I don't know if I made the point to you, but I think one thing is obvious, and when Krishna says, I give intelligence how to come to me, that, and then the idea that when you're ready, you meet a guru, when you're not ready, you won't, that there's an aspect of this conversation in which even a neophyte, even a new person, we see they're getting guidance from Krishna and how to progress in devotional service. So I'm not talking here about sophisticated knowledge which is, and realization which is beyond us, and that you should think you have it, and you have it at any stage of your Krishna consciousness. But what I'm saying is the guidance that Krishna gives to a sincere devotee, it's always there at every stage, and that's how we became devotees. Somehow or other, Krishna was inspiring us that what we were hearing from the devotees and what we were reading in Prabhupada's books was correct. It made sense. He was inspiring us to go forward in our lives. He was inspiring us to renounce certain things. He was inspiring us to accept, to trust in other devotees, or to trust in Vedic knowledge. So that's all what I'm talking about. It's very clear that Krishna's giving guidance, but it often becomes obscured because we think, well, I'm not qualified. Maybe I don't understand things correctly. And it's true, we don't understand everything correctly, and we have to take guidance from senior people. We're not all-knowing. So I'm not trying to say that any young devotee can know everything, but one of the things that Prabhupada wanted to do, and one of the pitfalls that we run into, is that he wanted his devotees to be able to take this inspiration from Krishna, to use their intelligence, and not be overly dependent on the intelligence of others, to the point where they're perhaps not thinking as intelligently as they could, as clearly as they could, or they're even hesitant to make decisions because they fear they're just not qualified enough in Krishna consciousness. And so that's not what Prabhupada wanted. And the interesting thing is, if you know anything about psychology, that in the world of psych, you know, we teach that we should be dependent on Guru and we should be dependent on Krishna. And there's no question we should be dependent, and we teach that you approach the Guru thinking yourself a fool. But Prabhupada said the important thing to understand is that although you may approach thinking that you're a fool, you don't act like a fool. And what Prabhupada meant is you approach understanding you don't know everything, and then he can enlighten you. And then when you get that enlightenment, then you act properly. So Prabhupada always condemned over being overly dependent, because if you're too dependent, then it's like you've been given knowledge, but you don't use it. And you're always depending on other people for guidance, even though you have the knowledge, even though you've been given the guidance. So Prabhupada didn't want his disciples to be like that. And as I was saying, in the world of psychology, they diagnose this as actually a mental disorder. Maybe not exactly this, but they diagnose that if a person can't make their own decisions, they're dependent on others to make decisions for them, it's actually a mental disorder. And you may know people like that. They say, what do? I don't know what to do. And they're always asking for guidance. And they can't make any of their own decisions. So the reason I'm bringing this up is I find it so interesting, because in spiritual life you do have that element in which disciple is dependent on the Guru. And tell me what to do, just like Arjuna. Tell me what to do. I don't know. What should I do? But the point I'm making is, when you approach the Guru and you ask the question, he gives you answers. So he tells you what to do. If at that point you keep asking, even though you've already got the answer, that's a weakness. Because now he gives you the answer. So it's okay, here's the answer, now go do it. Or use your ability, use your intelligence. Take what I've given you and then do it. So there is a balance in terms of dependency, where if we're too independent, that's a symptom of pride. I know everything, I don't need anyone, or I know everything my guru teaches, so I can do anything. So there is a sense that it's healthy, and there's a sense that it's unhealthy, just as there's a sense of being too dependent is unhealthy. But being dependent is a sign of health. So this is just an observation I've made, that it's not... If devotees are coming to our movement and the training puts them in a situation where they doubt their own integrity or they doubt their own intuition, they're afraid to use their intelligence, they're not creative and inspired in Krishna consciousness because they're afraid that they would go out of bounds, or if they see something, and this is a more sensitive issue, they see something that's wrong in the movement, or they see that someone's doing something wrong, and that someone they see doing something wrong is not supposed to. They can sometimes become conflicted, and in some cases they may see the wrong as right, because the person that they're seeing doing the wrong shouldn't be doing anything wrong. So then they may have to, in their minds, somehow or other conceive that it's actually transcendental, perhaps. So they're going against what they're actually seeing, and they're going against what they actually know is wrong, or going against, you could say, what's right within them, and they don't see it. And if they feel that it's wrong, then they start feeling, well, I have to feel bad that I'm feeling this is wrong, because it couldn't be wrong. So, and I think in normal set of circumstances, in normal life, I don't know what normal life, abnormal life, life outside of Krishna consciousness, is a little, often it's a little more black and white. Something is wrong. You know, president of the United States does something wrong. It's obviously wrong. There's no doubt it's wrong. Everybody says it's wrong. Okay. What you do about it is another thing. You know, it's more black and white, and there's less at stake for us. But in Krishna consciousness, we're always afraid we'll make offenses to another devotee. It could be damaging to our spiritual life, so we're very cautious. We're always afraid we're not understanding the philosophy correctly. And as I said, that can alienate us a bit from using our intelligence out of fear that my intelligence may misdirect me or my intelligence may cause me to make offense. I think it's important, I mean, at least one of the things that I've come to understand myself is that as conditioned souls, we do make mistakes, but probably pride is the biggest mistake. So if I sense that something is wrong and I say, okay, well, Mahatma Prabhu is saying, Panaratmananda is saying, am I all right? I sound like I'm sick. Just something in the air. I'm okay. I'll be all right. And a lot of dancing at Rath Yatra last night. Yeah. So sometimes we have a sense something is right. We're afraid to speak it, or sometimes we're even afraid to think it. Because as I was saying, we may think that it's offensive or it's just wrong and we'll be misled. And I think it's important to understand two things, that Krishna says in the Gita, one who does good will never be overcome by evil. What Krishna means is that a devotee who is sincere will always be properly directed. And if we are not properly directed, if we end up somewhere other than at Krishna's lotus feet or the lotus feet of Prabhupada, then we can say based on this verse, we did something bad. Or good, being translated in this sense more accurately, is sincere. One who does the right thing, one who sincerely does the right thing, he'll never be misled because Krishna will always guide him to the right thing. The sincere person does not meet a bogus guru. A person who's not really sincere, there are many bogus gurus waiting, lined up for their money. So, in the same way, sometimes because we're not perfect, we obviously make imperfect decisions, we do wrong things. If a devotee is sincere, gradually he or she will come to understand that it was wrong. They may not understand it for 10 years, but they will understand it at some point. And so I think we need to have faith in our own sincerity. That's the most important thing. My brain may not always work well. I may not understand everything. I may not have sufficient knowledge to understand everything. I may not understand everything my guru tells me, even I should understand. So we have some limitations just based on our mental abilities or based on the level of advancement we've achieved in Krishna consciousness, because on certain stages of advancement you will not be able to understand things as deeply as you would on another stage. So we have limitations. And so everything's not going to be perfect. And you might say, well, it sounds like what you're saying is that don't worry because everything will work out. And I am saying that. It just may take time to work out. And I'm saying that we have, in making decisions that we feel are correct, which we may not know 100%, there's no way sometimes we may know because we're dealing with something we have no experience of. In making those kinds of decisions, that sincerity is the most important thing. Of course, I'm not saying you're not following Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. I don't mean that. I'm saying just be sincere. You don't need books. In a sense, you could say that you don't. You just need a Guru, and you need the holy name, and you need sincerity, and everything will be there. But even though I could say that, I'm not saying that because it's not really the way Prabhupada taught us entirely. He did teach that, but not entirely. So you have books, you have Shastra, you have guidance, Guru Sadhu. But we still will make mistakes, but we have to base decisions on what we believe to be correct in that particular environment, based on what we've learned from Prabhupada and what we've learned from Shastra. And I don't want to say it's okay to make mistakes because we shouldn't, but what I mean by saying it's okay to make mistakes is that we will make mistakes, and that's normal. And that, as Krishna says, Nahi Kalyana Kritkaschit, if a devotee is sincere, then he's going to be guided eventually. He'll understand the mistake and he'll be guided properly. So I'm just saying that so, because you might be thinking, well, but I'm afraid to fully use my intelligence because I don't trust it. I don't think I have it. All right, if I'm a fool before my guru, how can I make so many decisions? But we have to make decisions. And we have to be able to take what our guru has given and put it together intelligently and say, okay, this is what should be done in this situation. And not think, I don't know anything, I just have to spend my whole life asking people, should I go right or go left? That's unhealthy. That's not what it means to surrender. And that's the problem that I'm discussing here, and we discussed it fairly deeply in the last class, and I'm just kind of broadening the perspective a little bit to show that it's actually a psychological weakness when you become too dependent on others' direction. It's not a strength. In to depend on the spiritual master, to depend on Prabhupada, to depend on Prabhupada's books is a sign of strength. It's just when the dependence can turn into weakness, when you just can't do anything unless you ask somebody, is it okay if I eat this? Can I eat more? I mean, you think I'm exaggerating, but if you translate that into certain behaviors, some people that actually have a really difficult time making decisions in their life. And that's not, I mean, Prabhupada gave us so many books, so obviously we should be able to make decisions. So that's the first point. If you're sincere, go ahead and make a decision. If it's the wrong decision, Krishna will show you that was the wrong decision, and you'll learn from that. It's not a total disaster, but go with what you believe to be correct in a particular situation based on your understanding of Krishna consciousness and your personal experience in life and whatever inspiration Krishna is giving you in the moment. Don't be afraid to follow that. And then thinking, oh, but does that mean you're saying Paramatma is guiding me and that's only possible if I'm on a higher stage? And you may not know that it's Paramatma speaking to you, but often it is Paramatma. Because Krishna says I give intelligence, so you may not hear it directly as you would as a pure devotee in a higher stage, but it is, he's giving inspiration. He's giving his devotees inspiration all the time. Sometimes you might say, well, how do I know it's not Maya? Well, as you advance, it will be less. You will be less in Maya, so it's going to be less Maya. Right? Because Maya just means, ultimately, Maya means material desire. It sounds like that dog's he's chained to a fence and somebody's hammering his toes or something. He just decided to start barking as background music because he probably doesn't like what I'm saying. I don't know. So when you hear the recording of this, you'll get so disturbed you won't be able to listen to it. So, yes, it is possible to be inspired by Maya, for one's intelligence to be bewildered by Maya. But the principle is, the principle of Krishna consciousness is that if you're following the process, then you shouldn't be in Maya, or you should be fairly out of Maya. And if you're fairly out of Maya, that means your senses are fairly purified and your intelligence is fairly purified. So the information that's coming to you and the realizations you're getting should be fairly Krishna conscious. Therefore, you shouldn't be fearful that, oh, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to act, I have these feelings that I think this is right, but I'm bewildered, is it really right? I mean, am I that smart that I could actually make all these decisions? Am I that advanced that Krishna's really giving me this insight or intuition? That kind of thinking it doesn't make sense, because if you're actually following Krishna consciousness, Krishna says that's exactly what he does, is give you all of that. So to think that you're not getting it, you can't really back that up shastrically. Does that make sense? It makes sense to me. You know, that if you're like Prabhupada would often say in his letters, he said, Krishna will give you intelligence. And he was saying this to very young devotees. Obviously, everyone Prabhupada was speaking to were young devotees, at least by our standards today, the oldest devotee could only be 11 years in ISKCON, maximum 12, but probably 11. And majority, I would say the majority of people in ISKCON, when Prabhupada left, have not been devotees more than 5 years. And actually, if someone, I would say, if someone did a study, I would say most of the devotees were 3 or 4 years in the movement, the majority before Prabhupada left. So just try to understand that every you know, you look at letters Prabhupada wrote, 1972, 73, 74, he's writing to a lot of people who've only been devotees a few years. And he's saying Krishna will give you intelligence. So I'm talking about this because I see it's often a problem because devotees they often get confused about just, you know, like Krishna's inspiring them, but they don't always realize it. They're not always connected with it. And at the same time, it is true that sometimes Maya bewilders us. So I'm not saying that that's not going to happen. The point I'm making is that if you're following Krishna consciousness well, Krishna promises, I'll give you intelligence, I'll guide you. So you shouldn't be in this position to doubt that. You know, I was feeling this way, I was getting this inspiration, I was getting this idea. Is it really Maya? Is it Krishna? If you're in Krishna consciousness, generally it's going to be Krishna. If you're in Maya, generally it's going to be Maya, because Maya is going to direct you towards sense gratification. So if you're getting some idea that has basis in Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, why should you doubt it? And if you're not sure it has basis in Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, you should ask somebody. But don't be disconnected from, don't turn your intelligence off. That's my point. If the result of our training is that people come to a point where they're not even confident in their own intelligence and their own intuition, then we're making people mentally ill. And, of course, it sounds kind of funny and awkward and ironic and paradoxical, but my point is, that happens. You know, if we train people in fanatical ways to see everything black and white, then their minds are not functioning correctly. And they make wrong decisions that perhaps they wouldn't have made if they hadn't been trained that way. So anyway, I think you understand this because we've spoken about it before. And maybe some practical examples would be good. Okay, let's give some practical examples. Now, what is common is, and I find this more common amongst Indians than Westerners. I have to preface this by a funny story. Indian religion is much more ritualistic than Western religion. So Indians are more, generally they're more superstitious. And in some cases they're superstitious for right reasons, because there are certain things which we should do that are correct, that are auspicious, and some things are inauspicious. And they're more aware of that than people outside of India or non-Hindus. But it can also backfire, because they may take it to an extreme where it doesn't make sense, you know. So it's auspicious to do A, B, and C. And then they'll make E, D, and G, which have nothing to do with spirituality, they'll make that auspicious to the point where, you know, if you move into a new house, you do what's called Griha Pravesh. It's like a yajna. It's auspicious. So before you move in, do something auspicious. So that's fine. That's, as far as I know, that's there in Shastra. You know, you do a proper wedding ceremony, birth ceremony, when your child eats grains. You do these auspicious activities, which are there in Shastra. So Indians know this. They know there's certain auspicious days to do things, inauspicious days. When you circumambulate, you go around someone, you go around clockwise. That's auspicious. Not all the Indians know this. Counterclockwise is inauspicious. You honor someone by walking around them if they're on your right, so you're going clockwise. So there's certain flowers that are considered auspicious for certain deities like that. So But if you take that to the extreme, then you start to become, you can become overly concerned. Did I do this? Was it wrong? What's going to happen? And you become, when I say overly concerned, you become very fearful. And it limits often clearly being able to think about situations and to being able to act more naturally because you're overly concerned. Was this right? Is this okay? Did I do the wrong thing? Are you supposed to do it this way? Did I make an offense? Oh, I think I made an offense. And then you actually didn't make an offense, but because you thought you made an offense, then you're really upset and you believe that maybe your Krishna consciousness is going to be damaged because you said something or did something which was offensive, when actually it wasn't. But just by thinking that it was, you start believing it was, and then you start feeling that your Krishna consciousness is weakening when it really isn't. Can you relate to all this? Or is this like out of your experience? It's within my experience. I've seen it. But the funny thing that happened yesterday is we went to this park. It was actually a park built by an organization called Shaiva Siddhanta. And so it had a lot of beautiful statues of Ganesh and Shiva Linga. And so they had eucalyptus trees, and Prabhupada used, I don't know if you know, but Prabhupada used twigs to brush his teeth, and he used eucalyptus twigs. So I got a eucalyptus twig, and I said, hey, Prabhupada used this to brush his teeth. So I demonstrated how you do it and started doing it. And I said, well, do you want to take one? I said, okay. So they pulled a branch, and they pulled a twig, but the twig had a bunch of leaves. So we're walking to the car, and we saw a lady, and she was doing some puja. And I turned to the devotee, I said, next time you come here, everyone's going to be carrying these leaves because they think these leaves are auspicious. Because there are certain leaves, like kusha grass. Kusha is not a leaf, it's a grass, but it's considered very auspicious physically and spiritually. Just auspicious to carry. So I was joking. I wasn't serious. I said, well, partially serious. I said, yeah, next time you come here, all these people are going to be walking around with eucalyptus leaves. And within 10 seconds of me saying that, there was a lady there. And she saw me carrying, I had like 20 leaves and a few twigs connected. She said, and she asked the devotee, I don't know exactly how she asked it, but, something like, should I be carrying that? Is it auspicious? And we just started laughing. So, you understand my point? That Indian culture is like that. So you always want to do the auspicious thing because you get a good result. You want to make sure you don't do the inauspicious thing. And then if we bring people to Krishna consciousness and we train them, which we should, in what is auspicious and inauspicious, what is right and what is wrong, what is proper and improper, but we train them in a way that they start to become fanatical, black and white, overly, 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 overly concerned about right and wrong when they shouldn't be, then, next to the temple, we're going to have to open a mental hospital because all those people are going to go crazy. And I'm sure you can relate to it, right? Maybe that's a good idea. Maybe next to every Hare Krishna temple, there should be a mental institution. Hare Krishna. Okay, I'm just joking, right? But it may not be a bad idea after all. So, does that make sense? You still awake? Is everyone alive, breathing? What? You still hearing me? I don't know. Yeah. Okay. No, so I'm dead serious because I've seen all this. And it concerns me when you take somebody who can function normally and you put them in a situation where they're so concerned about what's right and wrong, they're not actually able to think clearly, because so many people are saying, don't do that, it's wrong. You shouldn't have done that. And then the other point I wanted to make is then sometimes you start thinking, I've offended this person. And you could actually fall into Maya because you think you're getting the results of an offense when you actually didn't even offend them. Now that's a problem. That is a serious problem. Because the way the mind works is that if you believe something, then it becomes real to you. So even if you didn't offend anyone, and but you believe you did, the result of that offense, the offense which you didn't make, will come to you because you think you made a result of, you will feel that you're experiencing the result of offense. So it's almost like you could psychologically throw yourself into Maya just by thinking you made an offense.
Does that make sense?
That's a very unhealthy state to be in. So, now, the other thing I wanted to say, I think it's clear, you know, and we probably all experience this to a little degree. And I'm speaking this both for your benefit, but also for the benefit of others that you'll be teaching in the future, and so that you don't train them to feel like they're walking on eggshells, that they can't do anything because they don't know. You know, like we have. I hope this doesn't happen now, but it would happen. You know, when people were new devotees, that they would join the temple, and there's so many things different, only with your right hand, and then, you know, we didn't let men wear underwear, they would wear kopans, and there was no toilet paper, sometimes there's no toilet seats, you'd use water, and you'd squat on a toilet, and that there was like four things that could throw you off a little bit right away, right? You just, you know, what to speak of, you know, you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, that's when you used to go to sleep, you know, and you're wearing, you know, what appears to be a diaper instead of pants. You know, everything's different, and you're wearing paint on your forehead. It's like really different, right? And now you have a ponytail on the back of your head. You know, you're really in a different world, aren't you? And we used to eat on the floor and then put wax paper on the floor and put the prasadam on it. So you're eating off the floor of wax paper. Yeah, but your life is really different. You're a little... You could be a little confused. And so you don't really know, if you're not a Hindu, you don't really know what to do. So you have to be told, and you make so many mistakes. And if somebody gets, you know, if people are on your case too much, you know, it can be a little, I mean, unless you like ritual and you're like, this is great, you know, I like to know exactly how to do everything. Some people are like that. It's not a problem for them, but for others, don't do that, don't do that. You did that wrong. You know? So... it can be difficult for people. So we, and also for ourselves, we don't want to make Krishna consciousness all about the rules. We want to make it about the consciousness. So I think you understand that. I think it's clear. So Venu or Atmananda says, yes, Gurudev, it's very true, because after living in the temple, I feel that I'm more insecure and I feel that I do offenses. Sometimes I feel myself like a fanatic woman. Before, to live in the temple, I was more natural. I didn't have fear. Yeah, yeah, so Bain is just agreeing. Now, I'm not saying everyone in every temple has the same experience. And also, you know, Venu, we're all individuals. So some people go in the temple in the same situation and they may not have that experience. You know, because we're different, we relate differently, and you know, some people are more submissive and more cooperative, and other people, you know, you ask them to do something, they'll say, "I'm not going to do that. That's stupid." You know, which is not the way you're trained as a new devotee. You're trained to do what you're asked, but some people are like that. So maybe those people, you know, will relate differently. But basically, Venu's just agreeing, and I think. Venu, probably you were just extremely submissive. That's your nature, you know, just to do, you know, cooperate, do, and that's all. It's a very good quality. The problem is if we're being guided by people who don't understand everything that I'm saying, then it can be bad for us, and it could make us. Here's the problem that a lot of times. In the way we're trained and dealt with, the people who are training us are focusing on things that aren't important. And then we, you know, they're giving us a list of rules and regulations, a lot of which are not really that important. And then you start getting a little too concerned about rules and regulations. You know, is it okay if I do this? You know, I did this, but they told me it was wrong. They told me I was chanting too fast. Oh, you know, what's wrong with me? I chant too fast. Maybe I shouldn't chant anymore. You know, chanting, you know, all right, slow down a little bit, it's okay, you know, or were you really chanting too fast? But so-and-so Maharaj chants that fast, and you get all, you know, it's all, it's unnecessary things to waste your energy on. But unfortunately, in some situations, they're like that because some people, by culture or by nature, are very, very ritualistic, very, very black and white, very much trained in this is right and this is wrong. And I'm not saying there are not rights and wrongs within ISKCON, but it can go to extremes in which you lose sight of actually what's the purpose of the right and wrong. And then it can just be, for lack of a better word, from my perception, it can be weird. It can just be a very weird way to practice devotional service, or a weird way to be trained, and it can make you weird, and the worst thing it does is that you'll train other people that way. So Krishna consciousness is more natural, and guru-disciple relationships are more natural. You know, disciples are saying, you know, did I make an offense to you, Guru Maharaj? And you're going to spend your whole life worrying about whether you made an offense to your spiritual master. Then, yeah, we need that mental hospital for you because you're going to have a nervous breakdown sooner or later. Right? So, you understand? You know, just, okay, there's 1,000 ways you could defend your spiritual master, but do you do those? And does he act, and even if you do any of those, does he actually take offense? Rarely, if at all. So, what's the real point? The real point is you want to worry about serving your spiritual master. Why focus on, did I make offense, right? You know, but we can be trained in a way where we're focusing on, did I offend? I don't want to offend my spiritual master. But that's not your relationship with your spiritual master is not how to avoid offense. Your relationship is to hear and to serve, right? You understand what I'm saying? It's, oh no, Maharaj is coming. I hope I don't make an offense. You know, I'm so offensive. My mind is so bad. Maybe I shouldn't come to the temple. Maybe I'll just stay home. You know, put my mind in a pot of ice water. Then I think I'll be okay. You know, what are you supposed to do? It's Krishna consciousness is about affection. It's about service. And I've said this before. I don't know if you remember me saying this, but I think it's important to understand that when we talk about what's offensive or improper, we have to look at it more in terms of its essence. Because we can do something wrong and it's not improper because our intention was to do something right. Our heart was there in the right place. So I did something wrong. Devotee came to my house and I offered him water instead of milk. Or offered him milk instead of water. Okay, he wanted water. I gave him milk. That was the wrong thing. But why did I give him milk? Because I thought milk was better than water. Okay. My brain should have understood if somebody wants water, they don't want milk. But my heart said milk is better than water. So my heart was in the right place. So is that an offense? You know, now think of it this way. I find this extremely sad, but also extremely funny. Let's say you went, you know, you're not a devotee, just, you know, you went to your friend's house and you said, I'm really thirsty, can I have some water, right? And he gives you a cup of milk and says, we've got this cow, we just made this milk, it's so good, you should try it. And you, what would you say? Would you say, that's offensive. I asked for water and you gave me milk. You are offensive. You wouldn't say that. Nobody would say that. Would they? I don't think so, right? Because you were just trying to serve out of your heart, you know. So actually it was nice. You gave him, thank you. I really just want some water, but I really, so what would you say? Say, thank you. But I really just want some water, but I really appreciate you offering the milk and maybe I'll take it later. You wouldn't say that's offensive. So if you do something wrong, but you do it sincerely to serve your spiritual master. When I say wrong, I don't mean like depositing $4 million into the wrong bank account. Like you wrote the bank account number wrong and someone else got $4 million. No, not like that. I'm saying, you know, you thought this guest of yours or this spiritual master, senior devotee, would like this, but you gave them that. And they said, no, thank you, but I really prefer this. Oh, I must have made an offense. I'm so bad. What hell am I going to? I can't do anything right. You know, to live that way is not healthy. But my point is, sometimes, unfortunately, due to our natures or due to the way we're preached to, we may think that way. So the point is, you when you do that, you weren't offensive because your heart was there in the right place. Even if you deposit money in the wrong account, it's per se, you know, if by the strict definition of offense, it's not really an offense. It's just an extremely unintelligent, spaced out thing to do, which as a result has displeased your spiritual master so much that as a consequence, you're in big trouble. Right? But my point is, was the, you know, when you make an offense, generally it's willful. Like when you criticize a devotee, it's willful. I mean, you may be bewildered by Maya, but still, you know, you could prevent it. But sometimes it's just, you know, you offered milk. That was, if not a premeditated act of vengeance. So that's what, you know, generally when someone, normal person, would take offense, they're taking offense because the person who they're is offending them is actually offending them. They actually are hurting them purposefully, which is different than just doing something honestly and with devotion, but doing the wrong thing. So my second point is, we don't want to create a society of paranoid people who walk around thinking, did I make an offense? Did I walk into the temple with my left foot rather than my right? Was there some hell for me now? I forgot to ring the bell. You know, will I take 10 births as a pig in Calcutta? You know, so you think, Mahatma, you're just telling jokes. Maybe, but sometimes it's like this. I can testify to this because I get questions which sound like, am I going to take 10 births as a pig in Calcutta for forgetting to do this? You think I'm exaggerating. Okay, I am exaggerating a little bit, but not entirely, believe me. And that, if this wasn't real, I wouldn't be talking about it right now. It's very real, and it's not healthy. And the point is, these are factors which cause us to not be able to use our intelligence fully and freely because we feel restricted because we're afraid we'll do something wrong. Yes, you might do something wrong, but you have to act anyway. And there are always going to be people who are going to correct you for walking into the temple with your right foot, with your left foot instead of, okay, I'm making this up. But I'm sure somewhere in some shastra it probably says you should walk in the temple with your right foot and you should throw some grain over your head and ring a bell 3 times. And, you know, I'm sure you could find shastras that'll tell you to do all that. And then if you become aware of that, you don't do it, you'll start feeling guilty. Oh, I didn't do it. What's, you know, do we have to do it as devotees? As my grandmother used to do it. I don't know. And you become, you know, prime candidate for, you know, 10 therapy, 10, you know, sessions with the psychiatrist. Because you're paranoid about walking in the temple with your left foot forward. Okay, I'll calm down now. Everybody, it's okay. Mahatma's all right. He just got a little wild here, but he's going to be okay. Okay, audio's breaking up. Is it only us?